Welcome to the deep dive. You send us the sources, and we dig into them for the key takeaways. That's the idea.
Yep.
So today, we're diving into AI and Business Transformation by Mal Meenhuis. This piece came up, I think it was mentioned at the SaaS CTO Unconference in London.
That's right, yeah.
And you flagged it for us. So our mission today is really to look past all the AI buzz, you know, and try to figure out which technologies, especially AI, are genuinely going to bring real, lasting change to businesses.
Exactly. Trying to sort the signal from the noise.
Consider this your shortcut to thinking smartly about adopting new tech.
And the author kicks things off with a really fundamental question. How do we actually tell the difference between like a truly game-changing technology and just the next fad? Another flash in the pan.
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
It really is. And it starts with defining what we even mean by transformative.
Okay, so what's the definition we're working with here?
Well, for Meenhuis, transformative tech isn't just, you know, a neat gadget. It's something that profoundly reshapes society, culture, the big picture stuff.
That's a high bar. And a key point they make is that it's really hard to see that transformation while it's happening, right?
Totally. You often only grasp the full impact looking back.
Like trying to predict the internet's full impact back in, say, 1995. Almost impossible.
Exactly. We're sort of in the middle of the story, as the author puts it. And these things have ripple effects.
Yeah.
These second, third order consequences.
Unintended consequences, yeah.
The stuff you just don't see coming initially. Like, think about social media. Started as a way to connect with friends.
Sure.
And now look at its impact on politics, mental health, everything. Huge unforeseen effect.
Okay, so to make this more concrete, Meenhuis talks about their time at Symbian, right? Around the millennium.
Yeah, a couple of interesting examples. One was WIP, Wireless Application Protocol.
Ah, WIP. I remember the hype. And I also remember it. Well, not really working that well.
Precisely. The author even suggests Googling it. And apparently the top hit now is a Cardi B song.
Ha! Huh. That says it all, doesn't it?
It kind of does.
Yeah.
WAP was pushed hard by big names, Nokia, Motorola. Meant to be the way mobiles accessed info.
But it just never really took off.
Nope. Faded pretty quickly. Maybe it just wasn't solving a real need easily enough, despite the backing.
And the contrast they draw is with the camera phone, specifically the Nokia 7650.
Right. Much less initial fanfare compared to WA.
But it completely changed how we communicate, even though those first pictures were, let's be honest, incredibly blurry.
Oh, absolutely terrible quality. And apparently, even inside Nokia, some engineers were skeptical.
Really? Why?
The thinking was, why put a camera on a phone when people have perfectly good separate cameras?
Shows how hard it is to predict what will actually catch on and change behavior.
Exactly. And this leads to a really interesting point the author makes.
Which is?
The camera phone's power wasn't just the camera or the phone. It was the combination. Seamlessly bundled.
Ah, okay. So that bundling created new ways to communicate.
Totally. Suddenly you could share moments visually, instantly. Something separate devices couldn't do in the same integrated way.
So the lesson is, bundling complementary tech can unlock unexpected value.
That seems to be the key insight. It's about the ecosystem, the new behaviors it enables, not just the single piece of tech.
Okay, this makes a good transition into the four criteria Meenhuis proposes for evaluating if a tech has that kind of transformative potential. First one, genuine user value.
Sounds obvious, but it's crucial. Does it actually solve a real problem or fulfill a real need for people? Or is it just, you know, cool?
Easy to get distracted by the shiny new thing.
For sure. And the author mentions a practical metric here, the Sean Ellis 40% rule.
How does that work?
Basically, during user research, if over 40% of your early adopters say they'd be very disappointed if the tech or feature disappeared,
then you're likely onto something with real value.
Exactly. It suggests you've hit a nerve.
And they use generative AI versus NFTs as an example here?
Yeah, quite a stark contrast. Gen AI, even early on, seems to have obvious, immediate uses for lots of people writing, coding, image creation.
Tangible benefits.
Right. NFTs, despite the huge hype cycle. Well, the widespread practical utility hasn't quite materialized in the same way for most people.
And there's that anecdote about Hanif Qureshi using Perplexity.
Oh, yeah. Fascinating. Using an AI tool to write in his own style and being surprised by how little editing it needed after he refined the prompt.
That really speaks to the immediate practical value these tools can offer.
Definitely. Okay, second criterion, ease of integration and trial.
Right. If it's a nightmare to actually implement or even just try out, its chances of taking off are much lower.
Absolutely. Generative AI often scores well here because you can frequently integrate it via an API.
Which is like a standard connector for software, relatively simple.
Relatively speaking, yes. Compared to WAPI, which required building a whole complex infrastructure first, it's night and day.
The easier it is to experiment, the faster adoption can happen.
Makes sense. Okay, third, multi-use case platform effects.
Meaning, how versatile is it? Can it be used in lots of different ways?
Exactly. Think Bluetooth versus WATIB again. Bluetooth could connect headphones, transfer files, keyboards, so many uses. WOP was much narrower.
And generative AI seems strong here too.
Looks that way. Potential across product, operations, marketing, ideation, even software development itself. Very broad potential.
Okay, and the final criterion, open standards. This sounds a bit more technical.
It is, but it's important for long-term momentum. Open standards let different systems work together smoothly.
Like the internet itself or Wi-Fi, built on shared protocol.
Precisely. That creates network effects. The more people use it, the more valuable it becomes.
But this is maybe a weak spot for AI currently.
Well, the author points out that as we move towards this future with lots of interacting AI agents, we don't really have those agreed upon standards yet.
Which could make it tricky for them to talk to each other effectively.
That could be a challenge, yeah. Interoperability, clear communication between agents.
Yeah.
It's still an evolving area.
It's really helpful to look at today's AI through these lenses using past examples. And the author also talks about the weak signal idea.
Right, that transformative tech often doesn't arrive with a huge bang. It starts small.
Like that anecdote about Evie, a Q&A bot from way back in 2012.
Yeah, amazing story. Even back then, you accessed it via an API, the same basic method as today, and it could apparently give surprisingly decent answers.
So the fundamental access method was there, but the capability wasn't quite there yet.
Exactly. The infrastructure, the basic idea was present, but the intelligence, the effectiveness, that's what's improved so dramatically.
Wow. Progress isn't always a sudden leap.
Often incremental. And they mention an old SKCD comic about AI tasks that now feels completely obsolete.
That's a good measure of progress when the jokes don't land anymore because reality overtook them.
Yeah. This ties into different kinds of innovation. The author brings up the innovation matrix.
Okay, what's that about?
It helps distinguish between disruptive innovation, creating something totally new, zero to one.
Like the printing press example.
Right. And sustaining innovation, making existing things better, 1 to 1.1. Improving efficiency, adding features.
And transformative tech is usually linked with that disruptive kind.
Often, yes. Yeah. The big breakthroughs. But even those usually build on what came before. It's rarely out of thin air.
And sustaining innovation is still vital, right? Improving current tech.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Making jet engines more fuel efficient, for instance. The author mentions Brian W. Arthur's combinatorial evolution, new things emerging from combining existing parts.
So real societal transformation probably needs both. The big leap and then the steady improvement.
Very likely, yeah. A mix of both.
Okay, so if you're a business leader trying to navigate all this, how do you manage it? The author suggests the technology radar.
Yeah, it's a practical tool, a way to map out technologies based on sort of how relevant they are to your business and how mature they are.
Using categories like hold, assess, trial, adopt.
Exactly. It gives you a framework to decide where to focus your attention and resources. Are you just watching something, actively testing it, or fully rolling it out?
And for stuff in assess, trial, adopt, you'd probably run small tests first. Proofs of concept.
Yeah, PAISEs, or spikes, they call them, to actually verify the value before you commit big time.
Makes sense. Now, a big challenge, explaining all this to non-tech stakeholders, the risks, the opportunities.
Oh, definitely. Articulating those trade-offs is tough. The risk of adopting something new versus the opportunity cost of not adopting it and falling behind.
That's the classic innovator's dilemma, right?
Pretty much. Established companies can be risk averse, but that opens the door for nimbler competitors.
And we've seen big names stumble, Xerox, Kodak, Nokia.
Yeah, companies that saw the changes coming but couldn't adapt their core business fast enough.
But then you have counterexamples like Microsoft's turnaround under Nadella.
True. And then maybe Intel's struggles in mobile and AI show it's still incredibly difficult, no magic formula.
And the author adds a UK-specific point here about basic digitization.
Yeah, referencing observations that many UK companies are still grappling with, getting basic digital processes right, never mind advanced AI.
So foundational stuff is still lacking in places.
Apparently so. It's even mentioned as a factor in low NHS productivity, a lack of digital transformation. It's a reminder that innovation isn't always the cutting edge.
Sometimes it's just catching up, getting the fundamentals right.
Exactly. Or just standard engineering, that sustaining innovation we talked about, making things work better.
And they suggest practical tools for that too, like value stream mapping.
Yeah. VSM helps you visualize a process, find the bottlenecks, and figure out where fixes will have the biggest impact.
And this idea of frugal innovation, Jugad.
Yeah, basically finding clever, low-cost solutions, using what you already have, experimenting quickly without massive investment.
Okay, what other frameworks do they mention for managing innovation?
There's the McKinsey Three Horizons model, the 70-20-10 split for resource allocation. 70% on the core business, 20% on adjacent opportunities, 10% on truly disruptive bets.
Provides some structure for balancing short-term and long-term thinking.
Right. And for exploring those more future-focused ideas, Amazon's PRFAQ method, writing the press release and FAQs before building anything.
Well, working backwards approach.
Exactly. It forces you to clarify the customer benefit and anticipate questions up front. And they also mentioned looking at past visions of the future, ontology and hyperstition.
Ideas that became real because people believed in them. Interesting angles.
Definitely food for thought.
So let's say you're convinced you need to do something with AI. Where do you start?
The advice is basically default to yes, but do it thoughtfully. Have a plan.
Okay, step one.
Talk to people across the business, the whole C-suite. Understand the different needs and potential opportunities.
And use that PMA reframework. Product, operations, marketing, ideation, coding.
Yeah, it's a helpful checklist to make sure you're considering AI's potential impact everywhere, not just in one silo.
And once you have a brainstormed list of potential AI projects,
yep.
How do you prioritize?
That's where RISE scoring comes in handy. Reach, impact, confidence, effort.
Score each idea on those dimensions.
Right. It gives you a semi-quantitative way to rank things and figure out which initiatives might give the biggest bang for your buck or are easiest to try first. Then you build POPIs for the top ones.
And every company's PMX shape will look different.
For sure. Depends entirely on the business model, industry, goals, where the biggest levers are.
And coding gets called out specifically.
Yes. The advice is pretty clear. Actively encourage AI adoption within engineering teams. It's becoming a crucial area.
This idea of AI-driven development, AD.
Yeah, it suggests a shift beyond just AI assisting coders towards AI playing a more fundamental role in creating software. Mm-hmm. Tools like Claude Sonnet, Cursor IDE, they're early signs of this.
Okay, so when you run these AI experiments, these PHOs, any specific tips?
Definitely have a baseline, a non-AI version to compare against. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, how do you know if it's actually better?
Good point. What else?
Don't overthink the risks too much. Especially for internal tools. Many decisions are reversible.
Two-way doors, not one-way doors.
Exactly. Be mindful that testing AI can be tricky because it's not always deterministic. You might get slightly different outputs each time.
So QA needs adapting.
Yeah. And aim for trials you can easily roll back if needed. Low barrier to retreat.
Makes sense. The author also mentions this 3-30-300 rule for sauce experiments.
Oh, yeah. It's a nice little heuristic. It basically says your innovation and feedback methods change with scale.
How so?
With like 3 users, you have deep conversations. With 30, maybe surveys work well. With 300 or 3,000, you need statistically robust A-B testing to really know what's working.
So the approach evolves as you grow.
Exactly. You move from qualitative to quantitative.
Okay. Shifting gears significantly now. Towards the end, the author brings up the climate crisis, calls it the biggest elephant in the room.
Yeah, it's a stark reminder. Even with all this focus on AI, there are these huge systemic challenges we can't ignore.
And it poses real business risks.
Definitely. Both transition risks, policy changes, market shifts towards low carbon, and physical risks, the actual impacts of climate change, like extreme weather affecting supply chains.
And AI itself isn't resource neutral.
Not at all. Training these large models takes significant energy. It's something tech leaders need to be aware of and communicate about.
Adopting a legacy mindset, as they put it, thinking long term.
Yes, considering the kind of world we're building and the impact of our decisions beyond the next quarter.
So wrapping up, the final question posed is, AI blessing or bandwagon?
And the conclusion is, it's kind of a false dichotomy.
Because AI is just a tool.
Exactly, inherently neutral. The real question is how we use it. What's the goal? Augmenting people or replacing them?
They mentioned that example of AI cold calling agents.
Yeah, insanely fast agents. Makes you think about the pressure on human call center workers. It raises real ethical and societal questions.
And that quote from Vinod Khosla, the future of AI, depends more on policy than tech.
Right. It underscores that we have choices to make about governance, ethics, the kind of society we want AI to operate within.
It comes back to that legacy mindset again. What future do we actually want, and how can AI help us get there responsibly?
That seems to be the core message. Think bigger picture.
So as we finish this deep dive on AI and business transformation, we've covered a lot. Frameworks for evaluation, the absolute need for real user value, integrating tech, open standards, and these bigger societal questions too.
Yeah, and the climate context.
Right. It really emphasizes critical thinking, looking beyond the immediate hype and considering the long-term view.
Definitely.
So maybe the final thought for you listening is, look around your own work, your own field. What are those weak signals you might be seeing? What potential transformative tech is maybe just starting to emerge? And thinking about that legacy, what do you want to build with the tools becoming available now?
Yeah, that's the question to ponder. What legacy are you building?